Are you ready to get iconic with CCR? Christy Carlson Romano here, and on this pod, I'll be peeling back the curtain on my life like never before. Get ready, because I'm going to be sharing all things fame, fortune, beauty, relationships, and more. So go grab your bestie and tune in each week, because your iconic big sis is here to bring you unfiltered realness. Trust me, every juicy moment is one you won't want to miss.
Hi, I'm Ashley Flowers, creator and host of the number one true crime podcast, Crime Junkie. Every Monday, me and my best friend Britt break down a new case, but not in the way you've heard before, and not the cases you've heard before. You'll hear stories on Crime Junkie that haven't been told anywhere else. I'll tell you what you can do to help victims and their families get justice. Join us for new episodes of Crime Junkie every Monday, already waiting for you by searching for Crime Junkie wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is a Podco original.
When I auditioned for the show, I actually auditioned for Spencer. But when did you first have to make out with her, and did you use tongue?
No, I didn't use tongue. I would have popped it in, but she kind of seemed unwilling. No, I'm just kidding.
When you walk into a crime scene, you behave as though you're stepping into a minefield.
So did you feel that you were a little more fluid at the time of the show? And are you fluid now? Keegan told me that everyone was making out in real life.
Time out.
I'm still here, bitches,
and I know everything. On top of this rewatch, we have a very exciting segment at the end where we combine rewatch with
true crime
with a real life renowned death investigator, Joseph Scott Morgan.
Yes.
Now, look, we gotta check that he's not also working for the other side as a serial killer. He's got those three names. Anyway. Yeah.
We never know, and apparently death investigators can become serial killers. So we gotta make sure that we talk to him from afar. No, just kidding, Joseph. He's amazing. So I'm excited. We're gonna rewatch the show together. We're gonna talk about everything. We're gonna get deep and vulnerable and talk about all the things, and then also try to figure out how not to get murdered.
100%.
Lindsay. What are we doing here?
I don't even know. How did you land us here? You manifested this.
I manifested that we were going to do a Pretty Little Liars podcast, and you are here braless and all.
I am super braless right now. All right, so like—
Where's your bra?
My period's heading over, and so these globes are so heavy right now.
Oh my goodness.
And so I just, like, I was sitting here, I was like, shh, crap, I should put one on, because my tendency is to, like, do this.
Just to touch your boobs.
Well, also just, like, I'm fighting gravity with that. It makes me feel
somehow— But do you
care?
Do you care that they're like where they are right now?
I feel like they're a little uncomfortable because I do just want to go like this, but I won't.
Listen, you know? If you have to get them out for ratings, then you just have to do what you have to do. You're wearing your period undies, though.
Oh my God, you're going to bring that up too. Yeah. I am wearing my period undies.
You're just going to free bleed
today. Wow, look, you got me sweating already.
You know what's weird is I don't think that people actually understand that this is who we are in, like, real life, because we're these side characters that, you know, people think are either assholes or really mean in real life or sort of not really part of the plot.
Right.
So I'm just like, to have a show that's just us to talk about all the gossip of the show, I think it's just genius.
It's so cool. And you and I have always had, like, a very cool connection from the start. Yeah. I remember just always thinking that you were just such this energetic ball of life. And then
I was lying to you.
I knew you through your daughter. Like, she came to set, and that was right during the time that you had her.
I gave birth on that show.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I'm just really glad to be sitting here across from you. Like, I think we kind of had some similar experiences as peripheral characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. You know the pilot? So the pilot, I was actually... when I auditioned for the show for Pretty Little Liars, I actually auditioned for Spencer. I don't know if you know that.
No.
Yeah. I auditioned for Spencer, and I actually told Marlene King in the room that the show was, that my audition was so bad that she should fire me.
Babe.
I know. I was like, this is the worst audition I've ever given. I need you to, I need you to, like, not cast me right now. If you hired me, you should fire me.
Oh.
I know. And she thought it was funny. She thought it was, like, this kind of, like, hidden sort of joke that I was giving. And I was like, no, it was actually so bad. I called my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, and I said to him, I don't ever want to be an actor ever again.
No.
I know.
what are those that you walked out from?
I know. And then they're like, you've got the job of this girl that like doesn't talk at all in the pilot.
And you're like, what?
Maybe I am better than I thought I was.
Maybe they do want me.
Maybe I am really special.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
But the show was really successful kind of by the time you got on the show, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, y'all were set sail. And yeah. I came in, I was a character that wasn't in the books originally. Yeah.
Right.
Totally written in, you know, through the minds of Marlene and Oliver and company.
Do you remember your first day?
I do. I do remember my first day because I was supposed to be in the car smooching on Shay Mitchell in like this car scene.
Yeah. That was your first
scene? No. I'm sorry. I was missing it. My first was in the pool with her.
Okay, kissing.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
No.
Okay.
Competing.
Okay.
Teammates.
That's right. Yeah.
Right?
Because were you a swimmer in your life?
No.
You're like, I can't swim.
I can't swim in my life. But they gave us lessons.
Oh,
they
wow.
gave us swim lessons.
Okay.
And Shay was always so much faster than me.
Yeah. Is she longer?
No.
You're like,
nope.
No.
We are literally the exact same size.
Yeah.
And she was just always a little bit more competitive. She just has this edge where, like, she just wants it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah.
But when did you first have to make out with her, and did you use tongue?
No, I didn't use tongue.
Did you
I actually
ever
didn't
use
think
tongue?
That my character would be into that. I would have popped it in, but she kind of seemed unwilling. No, I'm just kidding. I
You're
mean,
just
I would
like,
have.
Just kidding, but no, for
I
real.
I would have. Just like in other makeouts that you do, sometimes you like pop tongue in there if you guys are hooking up behind the scenes. But no, I didn't. I never popped it in for Shay. I actually was very much like wanted to be very sacred about the role I was playing because.
Yeah.
I was really confused about my own sexual identity at the time that I
Interesting.
I thought I can't portray this as like a jokey anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But personally, now that I go back to it, but I was so locked in that headspace of like doing this character justice that I.
So did you feel that you were a little more fluid at the time of the show? And are you fluid now?
Am I a guest on this show?
You're more than welcome to ask me the same
oh
question.
Oh my God. I love that. Well, no, let me go back. Did you ever use tongue? Have you ever used tongue?
I used tongue once, and he used it.
Oh.
But I wasn't unaccepting of it.
Oh, okay.
I was like, it's a job.
I mean.
And so I didn't make a scene.
Right.
Like, I could have said something to him afterwards, but
right.
I didn't.
Right.
But that was probably the only time. But then when I had some people on...
Oh, so it was without your consent?
It was without my consent,
okay.
Yeah.
I do think that you should talk to somebody before you you're going to do that.
I feel like now there are, like, people... Because people who listen who aren't actresses, they have people now who actually walk through the whole thing with you. Like, this is where you can touch someone's shoulder.
An intimacy coordinator?
Yes, yes.
We didn't have none of that.
We didn't have any
We've
of that.
Never had any of that.
No, but they
is
do
that,
now.
Is that like a 2020 guideline thing?
They do now. Wow. You're like, I need to be more makeup scenes on set.
Like, please.
Yeah. But yeah, so they do that now. But no, I'd never had anyone. I thought you weren't supposed to put your tongue in.
I think just for hygiene purposes, you don't even want to do that in real life all the time.
Yeah. But I think some people do. Keegan told me that everyone was making out in real life.
Time out. We have to get to this first episode recap, but the juice here.
I know.
I want to know who everybody was making out with, because I know they used to follow around each other and like run around. Like everybody used to be like, just like it is on a set.
I think that there are a few of the cast sleeping together. Don't you? Oh, you're like, I wasn't privy to that information.
I wasn't privy to that information because I really was like, I think they thought I was a real loser.
Oh my God.
I mean, I didn't give them much contrary, like,
because you're like, because I was a loser. Did you, like, why? I liked you.
I was, like, on drugs, super withdrawn. They were all like, da-da-da.
Stay away from that chick with the bob, the red bob.
I remember even the PA used to make fun of me. What's his name?
What's Kyle? His name? Oh, my gosh, Kyle. I remember him. I was always intimidated by him.
Kyle definitely thought his shit didn't stink.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there's toilet paper coming from the back of your shoe.
And that he was like, the writer and the creator of the show.
I'm literally like, how are you making me feel this bad?
Yeah.
Like, but I don't mean it like that, because status has nothing to do with how somebody can make you feel. I just mean like, it's usually such a symbiotic relationship between the cast and the person who's in charge of wrangling them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I did not experience that warmness with him. I remember wearing these like these clog heels or whatever that I had
gotten. That's how we black people thought you're such a loser.
Such losers. And I wore them like 2 days in a row and I was like, these are my new clogs. He goes, oh, you must really like them.
Which is like, AKA, like, you're a loser. You're a loser.
You're a fucking loser.
Did you have your own, like, because the trailer thing, people don't understand too, if you're not an actor, but they have different rooms for different people. And you and I have been leads on shows before.
Right.
So, like, when you're the lead on the show, you get, like, a really nice dressing room. And when you're not the lead on the show, you get, like, a quarter of a trailer.
A double wide outside, not even.
Which is just the toilet.
A quarter of a trailer.
It's just the toilet.
How do they? Okay, you guys, think of, like, a camper van or whatever the heck.
But just a quarter of it.
But now think of it split into three different sections.
Yeah.
And that's usually... Or four.
You do get a bathroom.
You do get a
bathroom. With the shower over the toilet.
And it always smells like crap in there.
And then if you ever need to poop, it's the worst because you have to suck it down. Did you ever poop in the...
Religiously.
Oh my gosh.
Religiously.
Why did you poop so much?
Because I was on Adderall and I was shitting myself.
Oh my gosh.
While I was waiting to be called to set.
So that's why it smelled so bad.
It's so bad. Like, those were Adderall shits,
dude. I was a quarter of your trailer at the end, wondering why it kept smelling like poop all the way down. Because you were doing Adderall dump. But the thing... Wait, I'm so crying. I'm laughing. But the thing
Adderall
is, you have
dumps.
To, but when the poop...
I knew people knew.
When the poop comes out, people don't understand that you have to, like... There's, like, a pump.
Like a hose. There's like a hose and a pump that if it gets stuck up on the side, which you know they do because it's not filled with any freaking water, right? These are just dry freaking porta potties.
And who poops like solid these days when you're nervous about going on set?
Yeah, well, I don't know that. I mean, yeah, it's solid, but it hits there and no matter what velocity and force, it sticks to the side.
I know. So, and then you have to wash it down.
You have to take a hose. Hose the side of that thing down. I mean, I'm sure camping is more glamorous than
it is
than
way
what you have
more
to do.
Glamorous. You have to hose your own poop when you're number after five on the call sheet.
You have to hose your.
And then they get
you don't get that good plumbing after five on the call sheet.
And then they say action, and you're like pretending to like you know not have just sucked your poop down the sheet.
Make sure.
And you're like, hey. And action. Don't forget your line. Oh my gosh. But yeah, I'm sure people were sleeping together.
Oh my God.
I mean, that's what I heard.
I want to get into that, but I also want us to cover this first episode.
Okay.
Okay, let's jump into it.
The pilot.
Written by Marlene King. Directed by Leslie Linka Glatter.
Oh my God, I had pneumonia the day that I was shooting. I was so sick. But the good news is I only had to come in at the end. They were very afraid of me, but we didn't know what the show was about. So everyone was afraid of me, but I had no idea why. But I couldn't see. So I was wondering how scary could I really have been?
Okay, but here's my question. So How annoying were those first few episodes for you? Because
I spent more time in my trailer. Yeah, I didn't say anything. I didn't do anything.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And like I said, when they cast me, I got the pilot and I got the role, but then they didn't know if I could act because in the pilot, I didn't have to say anything. Mm. So I had to re-audition for the show.
That's heinous.
It's heinous.
They can't, like,
I didn't have a seat. I didn't also, did you have a seat back? Like, did you have a name? Like, what, you know, when you sit with everyone?
Yeah, no, I know. I'm trying to remember.
Or did it take a while until you got one?
But I think it took a while.
My point of saying that is,
I actually,
like,
never think I got one.
In the beginning, I don't think I really felt that part of it.
Which is crazy because you were there from the pilot.
And yeah, but I was a guest star.
But there was such, like, you were a very big, big plot in those first five episodes. I mean,
yeah.
The Jenna thing, that's the first, like, scandal
yeah.
that you find out about as, like, as one of the hints, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I had no idea. So I was a guest star, and I was supposed to be dead after the first season. It's in the books. I die. I know. So I thought it was just going to be for a second. Like, I thought it was just going to be for a minute. But going back to the pilot, what do you think about? So obviously, everyone's watched the show. What do you think about the whole Ezra, Arya thing, meeting in the bar?
Well, let's get to that. So I just want to, like, lay down this really quick. So here we go. We open on a dark and stormy night in Rosewood, Pennsylvania.
We have 30 pages of this pilot.
Yeah, we do, but I'm going to go fast. Okay, we introduce the girls, Arya, Hannah, and Spencer. They're drinking, they're hanging out. There's a powder outage. The barn door freaking swings open. The girls are terrified. They huddle together, okay, that first huddle, and they move towards the door as one. All right, then suddenly Allie pops into frame. That's our first jump scare. Hannah asks if Allie's downloaded the new Beyonce album. She says, not yet. Emily chimes in, I love her new video. Maybe a little too much, Em. What? That's what Allie says back to her. And then Allie says, friends share secrets. That's what keeps us close. They pass around a communal drink. Ooh, mono. Everyone passes out. Arya wakes up. She wakes Em. And then Hannah and Spencer and Allie are missing. Spencer walks up from the outside. She's gone. She's referencing Allie. She thinks she heard a scream. Newspaper hits. Photo of Allie. She's still missing. 1 year later, we pick up on Arya staring in the mirror. Enter her mom, Ella. Holly Marie Combs. It's weird to be home, she says. We were gone for a year sabbatical for your dad. It's the one-year anniversary of Allie's disappearance. Yeah.
First
of all, I just said disappearance.
In Iceland.
Yeah, in Iceland. Like, what were you doing there, sir?
Exactly.
You have no skills that would qualify yourself in Iceland.
And then what, Hannah shoplifts. We see Hannah shoplifting, which is, like, gives an indication of, like, what kind of character she is.
Yeah.
I actually love the relationship between Hannah and her mom. I think as... I haven't come from a separated, divorced family, but I think it was really great for the writers to have that relationship in there.
I love,
and I just think that there's, like, this understanding that they have to have each other's backs mm-hmm. because they're all that each other has.
Yeah.
And I just love that relationship. Then Arya meets Mr. Fitz in the bar. They end up making out really, really soon into it. And firstly, like, if he's supposed to be, how old is Mr. Fitz supposed to be?
Well, you just graduated from college.
So he's 22.
Okay.
Okay, and she's 16.
And yeah, he must have gotten that job the day he graduated.
Yeah.
He's like, no downtime.
No. He's great.
He had a job.
Right.
On luck.
And then he knows she's 16? You would assume, right? Because he says, what is your major?
Right. And she says, well, I'm looking to go into English.
Okay.
So that's the technicality that he gets off on for not knowing her age. Okay, first of all, I can give it the suspension of disbelief for this first interaction.
Yeah.
Right? I can give it the suspension of disbelief that they ran to the bathroom after, you know, three sentences exchanged with each other. I can buy that.
Can you?
I can.
Without alcohol.
He was drinking, right?
She wasn't.
Right.
Okay, sure. I'll the disbelief is there and I get that. I just don't know what if we get enough sense of who each other are in that scene to justify the intensity that they have for each other.
I completely agree. I think that the first moment to me feels very like lustful and not like something's being planted for a long time.
Right.
You know, which is why I'm giving it the suspension of disbelief. Cause I'm like, oh, okay. That happens as a one-off.
Right. Right. You know? Right.
Then, you know, we get back to, then we have those iconic credits that run for the first time.
I know. I just like wait for my name. Do you ever just wait for your name?
Of course.
Like, where's my name?
And all your friends are posting your name, like, like that one screenshot of your name on their Instagram.
Yeah, and I'd always be so mad because I'm an S. So I'm like right at the end. Oh. And I'm like, same. Sir sucks. Yeah. Yeah.
Shaw.
Yeah. Shaw. Shaw. But then it says guest star, right? So I'm just like, every time I see guest star, I'm like, I'm not one of them. It's a guest star. But yeah, so the credits come up.
Yeah.
Which is great in the beginning of the show.
Oh, so good. So good. I think they really nailed those.
And I love, you know, Hannah shoplifting. And I don't know, we get introduced to her in the pilot as someone who has transitioned into a very popular girl from being a mean girl.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly because she was overweight.
Right.
I think that those types of storylines in today's world would not fly.
Mm.
Like, she wasn't obese. She wasn't not able to get out of her house. She had pounds on her that I think is kind of detrimental to be talking about over and over and over again, especially when the show is geared towards high school students.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I had bulimia and anorexia when I was younger, and I know that if I had watched this show when I was 16, it would have just triggered all of that stuff for me.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, were you ever teased or overweight as a kid?
That was not something that I totally just dealt with, but I think that there is an exorbitant amount of reference to it in these first 12 episodes that... Yeah, I mean, it's noticeable even for somebody who doesn't super personally resonate with that issue.
And it's also like, oh, you will be popular once you've that's the message, that's the narrative, right? You will be popular once you look a certain way,
right?
Because she didn't change as a person,
right?
And then now the guy will want her.
Yep.
And again, it was 14 years ago, so
wild to think that like we are already of the age where like our stuff has been like
14 years,
like. That it could be culturally behind the times.
I know. Even the stuff about you being a lesbian with Shay, I'm like, so?
Right?
Like, who cares? Right.
Oh, my God. She was willing to kill that girl.
Yeah.
I was willing to kill her to keep that.
Secret.
Wait, so da-da-da-da. Okay, so I want to go to the first flashback where she says, Aria and Allie are running from Mona, who's calling out to them, super mean girl.
Yep.
They run into an alley where, haha, karma. They find Arya's dad making out with Meredith, and Arya is devastated.
Would you tell a parent if you saw that?
112%.
You would go straight away.
Oh, my gosh.
Even if it would break up your family.
I would beat feet. Actually, you know what? I don't know.
Did you say beat feet?
Beat your feet against the pavement.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah.
We'll put that on a sweatshirt.
What was I just saying before this?
I don't know. Once I heard beat feet, everything just went out the window. You would tell your parent about
the affair. Oh my gosh. Without doubt. Like, well, you know what? This is what I always start off with my most idealized notion.
Yeah.
And I realize, but that's not how you live.
I know, you know right? I mean?
So honestly, what would you do? Ooh, okay. So I actually had kind of a weird situation like this in my own family. My dad was like not supposed to be taking me over to this woman's house.
Mm.
And my mom had a restraining order, but he would still take me over there to be babysat. And she ended up hiring a private investigator to follow us,
As you do.
And so I remember my dad dropping me off, and he went, okay, Lindsay, so today is our little secret, right? And I was like, mm-hmm.
How old were you?
Like, I'm going to say like seven or eight. And he was like, we got to keep it a secret. Your mom's not going to like it. Okay. So I go in, and my mom immediately, where were you today? And I was like, and she goes, you were with so-and-so, weren't you? And so the words wouldn't come out of my mouth, but I wouldn't have walked away with a lie, but I couldn't put the words there, but I just was like,
And did your dad find out that you had in some way let her know?
They went to court, and I had to testify in court. Yeah, it was a very traumatic experience. My dad ended up being like, you know, this is all your fault. Like, this never would have happened if you hadn't told. And I was like, homie, I didn't tell. You know what I mean? I was trying to protect you. But yeah, so I guess like when I think about it, you know, I don't think I would have been able to keep it from her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, anyway, so.
That's
what about
a whole
you?
Bag of
shit.
Past trauma.
Right.
And feeling like you were responsible for other people's like demise.
Right. But I feel like now I feel like I could use my voice if like I needed to, that I'm of an age or an ilk now that anything would be that serious with my parents, but it's like,
I don't know if I would tell. I really don't know. I've never been put in a situation like that to ever really have to keep a secret. The problem is I have like verbal diarrhea. So like, and that's because when I get anxious, I talk too much.
Mm.
Hence why I'm on a show spilling the juice.
The
juice and the gossip. So for me, I feel like I would try not to tell, but I don't think it's in my makeup.
Right.
I think it would just be something that I would do.
Right.
But yeah, I think it was a really good plot twist. And then, at the end of, nearer the end of the episode, the detective comes to Hannah's house.
That's the thing I had the biggest issue with.
Mama's gonna put on some cute titty tops and have sex with you.
First of all, how hot is Laura Layton?
So hot.
Laura Layton. Yeah. So hot. Holy moly. Second of all, what? With that storyline?
And we're just like, okay. And as Hannah, aren't you like, this is gross.
This is awful. What? Her mom looks back at her at one point like.
She's like, just don't say anything, and walks upstairs.
For a shoplifting charge?
For Prada sunglasses?
That was so last season.
They're like, wait, so she slept with him over Prada sunglasses.
Over a shoplifting charge? Could you not have just bought the sunglasses?
Isn't that just a misdemeanor?
Like, if they were last season.
You opened your legs for a misdemeanor.
For a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah.
You were willing to get sloppy with it.
What would you open your legs for? You're like, just a hot cup of tea at this point.
Two pair of Prada sunglasses. What about you?
The latest season of Prada sunglasses. No, I probably wouldn't open my legs for anything, but tax-free if someone was like, you know, here's $300,000 cash, tax-free. I mean, how could you turn that down?
Wow, duty-free shop is where I'm going to find you, huh?
I mean, someone once said $300,000 is not a lot. I'm like, how long does it really take? Like, it's really not that long. I couldn't because I'm married, you know, and we like him.
But take that.
But I would give him 20%. I'd give him a finder's fee or something. I'd be like, here, hubby, this is $60,000 for you to just go have fun with. He'd probably be like, well.
Did you do the math in your head so quickly?
Yeah, I'm always doing that because I have a manager and an agent and I always have to pay them.
Gosh dang.
Pay the money.
Gosh dang. That was really great. I love people who can do math in their head. It's so hot.
It was also
I
only a multiple of three. It was just $300,000. It wasn't like $672.
I stand by what I said.
Yeah. It was really not a hard multiplication there.
All right. So we kind of meet all of the moms in here, right?
Yeah.
We get the first text. Crap. Okay. So Mr. Fitz is discovered as her teacher.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Yes.
As Arya's teacher.
And they just can't believe it.
And then she gets the first A text.
Yeah.
Maybe who fools around with students all the time. A lot of teachers do. Just ask your dad.
Ooh. Boom, boom, boom. At this point, you don't know if she's dead because we don't know.
Right.
So when you're watching the pilot, do you think, well, all these texts are from from Allison?
Gosh.
Or do you actually think she's dead?
I guess if I was logically thinking about it, I would think that she was dead. Like, but unfortunately, now that I've seen behind the curtain, I can't think of it in any other way.
Yeah.
I can't, like, see it as, like, you know, because the world was presented to me behind the curtain, so I can't.
But if you were getting text messages from T,
yeah.
Me, and I was missing.
You're not
going that
to
I would go missing,
T.
But if I did, and it was like, T, and I knew all your secrets, of course you would think it was
me. Yeah, that's true. That's
like,
true.
Who else would you think it would be from?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I guess the odds of anybody knowing anything.
Yeah, and then when Shay finds out first, which is Emily, she finds out that Allison is in fact dead. What did you think about that whole scene? Was it like, did you feel like it needed more buildup? Did you feel like there needed to be more tears? More hysteria.
Well,
more
first
shock.
Of all, I just want to say, how do you hear Shay's accent in the
about?
House.
House. My accent comes out.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah. She. I hear her deep in that. I never heard it working with her, so it's just so funny. Well, we're introduced to her mom, Nia Peoples. Beautiful. Great. 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 So when they anyway, I just went back there.
It's like we've got 2 minutes. Let's get to the end of the episode.
Let me fast forward. I thought it was a great plot twist. I loved that they found her body. That was so interesting. It threw everything off kilter. Mm-hmm. Then to keep getting the messages. I think all of the girls were sort of all of the girls definitely blossom emotionally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I actually think Ashley is super dialed in.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I didn't know because I didn't have that many scenes with her, but watching her back, I really like her as a character.
I do too.
Which I didn't expect just being behind the scenes.
I completely agree.
Like she does have a sensibility to her that makes you like her character.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit of pain that feels palpable.
Yeah.
Actually more than all the other characters for me.
I completely
agree. Out of everyone,
agree.
That's the person I care about the most.
Which is wild to me because I feel like sometimes behind the scenes, it's just amazing between action and cut the empathy that you can grow for people and like see in them, you know? Because she was a little bit of a...
aloof.
Just a colder personality little bit.
Right.
And really intense, really erratic, like always making people laugh, this, that, and other. And to know that like she's the vulnerable spot and the one that I'm drawn into the most right now.
Exactly.
You know?
And her and her mom's relationship, too, I really care about.
I'm obsessed.
More than any of the other relationships on the show.
I grew up my whole life with a single mom, and that bond, I feel like they got it in this way that you feel their solidarity. Like, I just felt like they had a great working relationship.
And I do think watching the show back after so long, I think it feels very different when you're in the show because we all bring all our baggage to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we all bring the... well, you know, why didn't we get more scenes? And you're young. Like, we're all in our, like, early to mid-20s.
Yeah.
And there's, even on set, which we'll talk about in other episodes, so please keep listening, but like there's rivalries on set. Mm-hmm. And there were characters and people on the set that did not get on in real life. And on camera, you would never know.
I mean, even the girls, like as it started up when they were all getting those PR opportunities and this, that, and other, how they were all like, you know, you're doing this. What are you doing? It was like this weird secret.
So we end this with Allie's funeral.
That's right.
Okay. And that iconic scene where everybody exits the church and we get our final episode text from A. And she says,
I'm still here, bitches.
And I know everything.
You forgot the best part. I walk into the end and they all are fucking afraid of me and they go, Jen is back. And did you know that the guy who played my brother was different?
I saw that. Yes. What was that? There was a close-up on him and I was like, what?
I don't know why he was fired.
That was so weird. Are you saying he got recast and they went back and shot all that?
He got fired after the pilot.
Okay, I'm going to
be honest. Because he texted me and he's like, I think my life would have changed if I stayed on Pretty Little Liars. I'm like, yeah, fucking would have changed.
Okay, I saw it in one shot, but it wasn't in the pilot. It was a weird shot of him like on the porch.
Why did he get fired? He was great.
I don't know. I didn't know any of the gossip literally other than what was happening with me and Jay.
And we'll talk about that in episode 2. And we have a really exciting little section on this show, which is true crime. Do you like true crime? Because it's literally all I think, breathe, and watch.
Wow. I get into binges of it. I get into my like favorite TikTok or YouTube, like real true crime little pages that just give me snippets.
Yeah.
That's what I like to do.
And because true crime is so big, we thought, well, this show is a true crime show. So why don't we get a death investigator, Joseph Scott Morgan, who I am friends with. I don't know why I'm friends with him. No, my family's known him for a very long time. He actually sees the bodies in the actual crime scene and he has to figure out what went down.
Oh.
So we're going to talk about what happened in the pilot. Is there still DNA that's recoverable?
Wow.
After a year, what is Allie's remains? What would Allie's remains look like? How important the gravesite is? And we're going to ask him all the questions. And
he's got this insane New Orleans accent that is perfect. He's one of those detectives that would be like, well, you know what? I'm going to ask him on the thing.
New Orleans accent.
Yeah. I'm going to say, have you ever said, in all my 30 years? That's what I want to hear him say.
He's going to be like, I see dead bodies.
So Joseph Scott Morgan.
Yeah.
Yee.
Welcome.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you.
Joseph Scott
Morgan. Thanks for inviting me. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely, man. Hey, quick question. Have you ever considered being a serial killer with the three-name thing?
No, there's no money in it. So there you go.
Only glory. Am I right? No.
You know, and it's just such a headache. You know, there's no way. No, I couldn't do it.
Too much heavy lifting.
Unfortunately, I've had to investigate many serial crimes over the course of my career. So,
wow.
But it's not something I ever wanted to seek out as a vocation or an avocation.
Right.
Before we get into this episode, just a quick question. Is there like a through line of something that serial killers all have in common? I've always wondered that. Is there like something?
It's going to be dependent upon what the proclivities are for that particular serial killer. They all have different interests, the things that they're looking for, power and control. You have individuals that like to take trophies. You have individuals that target specific groups. Mm. There is a through line, and that's one of the tricks to working serialized crime is you have to find that thread that you can kind of grab hold of and pull. And, you know, in our world, you know, where you might think pulling a thread is a bad thing if you have a beautiful sweater. But if it's a serial crime, if you can pull the thread, it begins to unravel and the picture becomes clear. And that's the key, is recognition and try to find out those little seams that you can get into and kind of explore what's going on.
Mm.
Wow. How many of them had three names?
How many of them have three? You mean like myself?
Yeah.
The specific identifier, isn't it? Yeah, it seems like they all do have three names.
Right?
I don't. You know, listen, I can't imagine that necessarily their moms all called them by all three names, but I think many a times the media does that in order to separate them out because it's a very distinguishing kind of thing.
Right.
Unless you've got individuals with hard vowels in their names. I mean, forgive me, hard consonants. Like if you're talking about a Dahmer, you know. He's going to stand alone.
Mm.
John Wayne Gacy, there's another one, but that's three names as well. I wonder if John Wayne Gacy's mom ever called him Johnny or John or Jack.
Yeah, I always think of that. I don't know. There were kids at some point, right?
But you have to say the media certainly hung on to that and called him John Wayne Gacy. So, yeah. Oh, wow. I hadn't thought about that. Hopefully I don't have something in my future.
Woo!
So in the pilot episode, at the end of the pilot, you know, the audience discovers that Allie is in fact murdered or killed. And it's been a year since, you know, she went missing. So is there even any recoverable DNA at that point if her body had been decomposing for a long period of time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, most definitely there would be. And specifically, if you're talking from the examination of remains, if you're just solely talking about her remains, you would have, in a case similar to that, you would have recoverable DNA. And you can get it from any number of locations. You can have it from hair, bone, teeth. Sometimes there'll be remnant of blood, any kind of biological sample where you can kind of find that thread, if you will. In this case, we're talking about molecular DNA. And so, yeah, and that goes back to a specific identifier. However, if you have a perpetrator that has had one-on-one contact with an individual, and say, for instance, they shed their own blood, and this got transferred over to the victim, even if they're buried, if their DNA is protected, say, we call it cocooning. If you cocoon a body, like you wrap it up, perhaps, that DNA can still be protected. It's not necessarily going to degrade to the point where you won't be able to use it, but that's why we have to be so careful. It seems, and in Allie's case, if you begin to think about, you know, a remain that is underneath a gazebo, for instance, it's kind of a protected area. If the body is protected, we have to continue to protect the body once we've exhumed the body from that site, and we can get the body back to the lab to do a thorough examination.
Wow. So in transit, you got to make sure all that DNA is still intact. And
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about it. You know, the world that we're in now with DNA, I tell my students that, look, it's not like old days, you know, where guys would walk into a scene and they're actually smoking a cigarette when they're working the scene. You have to approach any kind of crime scene now as if you are stepping into a sterile surgical suite.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that at a molecular level, you're introducing yourself into this otherwise pristine environment.
Mm.
And there's an old theory by a guy that this is pretty amazing by a guy named Edmond Lacard. And he lived in Lyon, France, and he established the first crime lab in the world. And he came up with an old construct, and it still applies today, even with digital forensics. And it's called Lacard's exchange principle. And so what it says is this: any contact leaves a trace. So that means that just you guys sitting in the studio right now, if you guys brush up against one another, if you touch or handle some object, you're transferring that bit of DNA or that bit of trace evidence one from another. Anything that you bring from your home or from your car, that transfers into the environment. So that's the reason that when you see crime scene investigators out at crime scenes and they're dressed in, some people call them bunny suits, you know, the Tyvek suits, the white suits, that's one of the reasons they do that, because you're shedding hair. You're shedding your own hair, even as an investigator. And look, you know, lotion companies, you know, people like, I don't know, can we say Jergens? I don't know. People like this, they've made millions and millions by convincing us that we need to protect our skin, right? Mm. So we shed hundreds of thousands of dead skin cells every day. And that gets into another area of DNA, what's called touch DNA. Mm. So you're losing dead skin cells all of the time. And they can fall. They can fall onto bodies. They can fall onto surfaces, other objects. you never know what you're going to leave behind.
Well, so how do you not leave your DNA? Like,
it's almost impossible not to nowadays.
So then does that mean you'll always, I mean, there's so many killers that aren't caught. So what are they doing that, like, how are they not leaving their DNA?
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Well, okay, here's the problem. If you've got environmental factors, say, for instance, you've got a body that's outside, you're contending with rain, wind, even barometric pressure can play a role in changes that go on. Direct sunlight can play a role. Say a biological sample is very fragile in that sense. If you superheat it, you can degrade it really, really quickly. But the biggest part, the biggest destructive agent are those of us that go out to scenes and process. That's why it's so important that we try to emphasize all the time with investigators, you need to handle this. I'm kind of a simple guy. So I tell my students, and I've told them from over the years, that when you walk into a crime scene, you behave as though you're stepping into a minefield, that any step that you can take or that you take has the potential to destroy everything that you have, and you have to view it that way. And it's kind of it makes you a bit neurotic when you're out there, but just consider what you're faced with. You literally have the life of a fellow human being that has ended, and you're the one person there that's there to document that person ever existed and to bear witness of all that remains at that point in time. And that's why it's so very important that we be careful at the scene.
I love that phrase, bear witness. It's so important. I love that you used that, because you are essentially there, as this like last respectful transition, you know, to the place they'll be forever.
Yeah. Here's another cool way that I like to look at it, and this, I think that it helps people that are getting into my field, is that I tell them, look, not only are you going to become a forensic scientist, but in a weird kind of way, you're a historian. Because I can't tell you guys, you know, I worked for the coroner in New Orleans, and I worked for the medical examiner in Atlanta, and they were pretty busy, busy places. And I had a lot of deaths, lots and lots of them. And, you know, not every death makes the news. Matter of fact, the majority of them don't. And when you go out to interpret what the dead are trying to tell you, you might be the only person that has ever made note that this person ever existed. So it's a real honor to be in that space in a weird kind of way, because you're marking that moment in time. You know, not everybody's Julius Caesar or Cleopatra, right? We've got tons of documents, you know, relative to the fact that they existed, how they died, all those sorts of things. But just for the average person out on the street, if it's not some over-the-top death or homicide, they're not even going to make it into the news cycle. And even really horrible homicides only make it through two or three turns of the news cycle most of the time. So the person that documents that individual's life, it honors them to a great degree. And I think that's very important.
Wow.
So one last question. So the gravesite in the in the pilot, at the end of the pilot, Allie's gravesite, so to speak, how important is that gravesite? And was she memorialized by the perpetrator? What do you think?
Yeah, that is key, isn't it? I think first off, if you create a gravesite I say you in the universal sense, I'm not directing that to you, but if anybody creates a grave site, that at a bare minimum is memorialization. And so folks understand this concept. When a death is memorialized, even by a killer, that shows a certain level of respect for the dead. Now, you can have cases where, unfortunately, people are killed and then just kind of cast off. They're thrown away like they're rubbish. And it's a horrible thing. But when graves are created and people are placed in them, that's significant. And from an investigative standpoint, it's very significant because the grave that is created, when that grave is in fact created, when a shovel is put to dirt, you're creating little marks in the dirt that otherwise may not have been disturbed previously. So there's any number of things that can be left behind, like trace elements, even metal from the transfer from the edge of the shovel, the way the shovel cuts through. If there's an underlying root system, that's going to be a specific tool mark on that root. The depth. Depth is a big thing because most of the time, in my experience, the deeper the grave, that means that the individual had a lot of time with the body. Now, you hear the term shallow grave all the time. Shallow grave is relative. I've had people that have placed individuals on the ground and then covered the body with rocks and debris, and that's not really a grave. We're talking about digging out a space, and how deep do you want to go? And so the deeper you go, the more care that's being taken. And it can be taken for any number of reasons. It can be taken by virtue of the fact that they don't want the body to be found, and they think the deeper they go, the higher the probability that that'll happen. And then in another weird way, if the person is aligned in a relationship with somebody, they want to try to do their best in some weird way to create what would otherwise be a grave, a memorialization that this individual deserved to be buried. And so you kind of have to read into that, and there's some interesting little nuances relative to that. But the fact that she was, in fact, buried under that gazebo is pretty intriguing.
Wow. And just lastly, the deeper you go, is it harder to find? Yeah. I mean, obviously, because you don't like wash it out. But
I was like, all the bodies.
Is that actually effective?
Why are you asking me that question?
We just want.
Yeah. The deeper. Yeah. Okay. So nowadays, and people have probably heard about this, but we have something called ground penetrating radar, which you can kind of move. It looks like I don't know how to describe it other than maybe an old fashioned reel lawnmower, you know, that turns like this under your own power, and you move it over the top of the ground, and it's bouncing signals back and forth, and you can appreciate disruptions. But also, you don't need ground penetrating radar. If you have a trained eye for this sort of thing, you can look at the earth and see where it is upturned or turned over, because most of the time soil will be packed down in its natural configuration. It may not have been touched in maybe 1,000 years. You never know.
Wow.
And unlike what you see in movies and this sort of thing, graves generally, particularly if you don't have a vault under the ground, are not mounded. Graves actually sink that are dug. So you'll have a depressed area. And that's, you know, the longer it settles, the more it's going. And plus, if there is a body beneath the ground, that body is decomposing and it's breaking down. So if you think of a solid mass that's beneath the ground, as the body begins to collapse, guess what? Those coverings that are above the body begin to collapse along with it. So you can just be kind of tooling along, looking at the ground, and you look down and you see this kind of dip in the ground.
Wow.
I'm not saying that every dip you come across in the woods is going to be a body or a clandestine grave.
Could be.
But if we're working the scene and we have an indication of that, we're going to hit on that area and we're going to excavate it.
I'm mind blown.
Oh, man.
And all I'm going to think
only
about
the first episode
all night about murder.
You're going to think about going back to the grave and repacking it, aren't you?
Yeah.
Joseph Scott Morgan, a.k.a. Joe Scott, wow, thank you. I look so forward to continuing to speak with you. And that is going to be our podcast for this week. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple,
YouTube,
Music, wherever else you get your podcasts. We love and appreciate you. We'll see you next week.
Bye,
thank you so
guys.
Much, Joe. See you next
Bye.
Week, dude.
Bye.